Choo-choo.
Speech making and,
all aboard.
And baby kissing and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Now boarding for Franklin.
on the 6th of December.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to run through the end of January.
Here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime on the internet, yes, through your browser, WFPR.FM, and in the local Franklin, Mass. FM radio dial, 102.9. Yeah, the thing with the dials or the buttons. You can preset the button at 102.9. Here in our glorious studio again today for another conversation with Scott Mason. Scott, thank you for doing this.
I'm shooting for co-host status.
Well, I mean, you know, that position is open. We can work that out.
Thank you for having me back.
Absolutely. So this one is what we're calling, what, Train Town 3, because we already did Train Town 1 and 2, and then you had started it, got, what, 67% thing?
67%, yeah.
But now it's done.
It's done. It's done. It's,
hallelujah.
Yeah. It's done. And it's actually, the exhibit is opening up on December 6th.
Yay.
So I'm very excited. This, you know, as we talked about a year ago, this has been such a process compared to the first two. We finished up, when I say we, my buddy Sam Maxwell and I, he really established himself as a partner in this process,
yep.
The project engineer. He was not only responsible for all the advanced CAD work, all the advanced design work, running the laser, running the 3D printer, but he was responsible for me. And I don't ever want to be responsible for me. I can't imagine how difficult that must have been for him. But we came in at about 2,500 hours. For this one diorama. People better like it. I hope they like it. I'm very pleased with the way it came out.
Having seen the one and two, I can only imagine the third is going to be in that same ballpark.
Well, I go through this process, and I think I don't want to go so far as to call myself a creative person, but...
You are a craftsman.
Well, thank you. When I start a project... I don't usually really like it for a long time. I'm dissatisfied with everything that I do.
It's kind of work. It's more work than play at that point.
Well, I'm so focused on a standard.
Ah.
That and there's pressure attached to that.
The concept.
If I'm building something for myself, I want it to come out nice.
Sure.
If I'm building something that hundreds of people are going to see, then that's a whole different thing.
They kicked it up a notch.
So usually it isn't until about the very end that I can look at it and say, all right, I'm okay with this.
You're satisfied.
Yeah. So when we talked the end of last October, myself and Sam, were scrambling to try to get this done to fit a timeline that mm-hmm. just wasn't practical.
Right. Yeah, the punch list was longer than the days.
The punch list was... I think in the high 40s at that point, and some of those punch list items were, you know, days projects.
Right.
And then, you know, like any construction project or renovation project that mm-hmm. you might do at home, it's you run across these things that you might as well do. Well, I'm doing this, so I might as well do this too. It's the same with this. So,
right.
You know, I want the detail to blow people away.
Mm-hmm.
We had... The benefit this time of our own 3D printer. So we were able to print a lot of our own detail castings.
Okay.
And when you're dealing with an exhibit this big, and when I say this big, it's 5 feet by 12 feet. So it's 60
feet
square
by
feet.
12 feet. 60 square feet.
And it has 30 buildings on it.
30 buildings?
Now, some are attached, some are standalone.
True.
But in the Hayward Mills, the Franklin Mill Store Complex,
right,
and Franklin,
which seems to be, at least in my mind, walking by and then having explored along the way, it's what, maybe four buildings, major ones, I would say, but it may have been evolving over time.
Yeah, so it was built in phases, just like Franklin Yarn behind it, Franklin Paint now, which is part of this diorama.
Yeah.
And this was a very common practice at the time. A mill owner would build a building to serve the purpose that was required at that time. As business grew, they would slap something onto it and then
to expand,
so on and so forth.
Yep.
In the case of the Franklin Mill Store, Haywood Mills, the oldest building is the furthest building back from Union Street.
Furthest one away. So they grew towards the street as opposed to going from the street inward.
Yeah, a little counterintuitive. But if you look at it closely and you know a little bit about architecture, you can see clearly that the architecture evolved as the building grew.
Sure.
There are four main parts of that building, but then there are all sorts of little
auxiliary things.
And then according to the Sanborn map, which is nothing more than a glorified line drawing of an aerial view.
Since we're first mentioning here, we have mentioned this. So Sanborn, if I recall correctly, was kind of the insurance map.
They were fire insurance underwriters.
Okay.
And they one of their main responsibilities was providing underwriting for mills along railroad right-of-ways.
Mm-hmm.
So for people like me who are interested in building miniature railroads, those maps are worth their weight in gold.
Sure. That's a true source.
However, the accuracy of those maps is sometimes questionable.
Right.
And if you look at them from year to year, you can see the evolution of a mill, but you can also see some implausibility with regards to, well, how could this in 1920 become this in 1927?
Right.
Sometimes it doesn't make a lot of sense, and then you wonder just where, you know, what's accurate and what isn't. Now, in this case, Haywood Mills is still standing.
Yeah.
Franklin Yarn is still standing.
That's a
big
advantage.
there was absolutely, and I know I said this last year, but there was no way I could have built these, recreated them, if they weren't.
Well, because I think you went with a tape measure and 100-foot tape and an electronic device to do literally the measurements all over the entire.
Yeah, so the first thing I needed to do was establish what existed in 1932.
Okay.
And what was added afterwards. The good news is, with the mill store, Haywood Mills, nothing had been taken away after 1932. Okay. Everything 1932 is still there.
Still there.
Not now.
Ish.
Not now. But it was a year ago.
Sure.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
They had added pieces after 1932. So once I determined that, then it was just a question of measuring, photographing, getting all that information.
Which then fed into the CAD.
Fed into the CAD, which fed into the laser.
Yep.
Which fed into my hands.
Right. A far cry from, if I recall, it was number one, Train Town 1, the depot station, where you actually found the CAD drawings.
Well, wouldn't that have been, you know, I called Gus Brown in the building department, and I said, hey, you don't by any chance have any blueprints. He said, no chance. You know, that doesn't mean they're not archived someplace,
somewhere.
But no place readily.
Somebody would remember.
It would take 100 years. You know, it's like finding the Ark of the Covenant in that warehouse in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So it was a process, and I knew what that process was going to entail. And I know we talked a little bit about this, but it had its pitfalls.
Mm-hmm.
Franklin Yarn was very straightforward. I had two owners who have since sold the building.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice guys, allowed me access to any place I wanted to go. Just knock on the door, let them know I'm on the property.
Mm-hmm.
I had people coming out so excited that we were doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Any information I needed was wonderful. It made my job very easy.
Sure.
Because it's difficult. It's time-consuming.
Oh, yeah.
I want to be accurate. With Haywood Mills, Margaret Murray, the owner, I don't think she actually wanted to kill me, but there was a sense that maybe if I died, she wouldn't miss me that much. I'm joking, but Margaret had some issues with the town that were completely not her fault.
Right.
She was the third generation owner of that mill. She's since sold it.
Yeah.
But with any mill that was built in the 1870s,
sure,
you're gonna have stuff, and she did. So. She was not keen to see a representative from the town of Franklin, regardless of what, you know, commission I was working with on her property with a tape measure and a laser measure and a camera. And, you know, her first thought was, I'm looking for something else to nail her with. And I could not, I think, ever totally convince her that that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. I also think, you know, she's a very practical person. That she didn't fully understand why anybody in their right mind
would ever want to reconstruct a building.
reconstruct a mill that I'm sure at the time she was desperately trying to unload. So, you know, what was probably a maintenance albatross for her was gold to me.
Sure.
So at the end of the day, I got, you know, all the information that I needed. And she came short of kicking me off the property. I'll say that.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I had her tacit approval.
Right.
So we got it done in April, and I had it done for a week. The crate was delivered. It was put in the crate and trucked away by the DPW to put in storage. It's been in the DPW warehouse since April.
Mm-hmm.
My wife Tina said to me. The day it was trucked away, are you sad to see it go? And I thought, well, in a way I am, because it's only been done for a week.
Sure.
So, you know, I just went through this 18-month process and, you know, only to say goodbye to it. So I think when it gets delivered to the museum in a few weeks and it gets uncrated, I think I'm going to look at it again like, whoa, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So, of course, I also may find a few things that need to be
touched up here.
Need to be touched up or add a little more detail to. Yeah. So
I forgot to do this. Oh, look at that. I didn't do that. Oh, wait a sec.
Yeah.
Hopefully not too many of those.
So from a by-the-numbers count, it was, like I say, it's 60 square feet. It's 30 buildings. It was 2,500 hours. We did, I think it was close to 800 hours of laser time.
Wow.
We just bored feet of bare wood.
Mm-hmm. And then painted and marked and put together.
Yep. The other piece to this, too, was that the two gentlemen that owned Franklin Paint at the time were so cooperative with me that Sam said, you know, we should really thank them. And I thought, you know, a lovely thank you card and, you know, maybe, you know, a bouquet of fruit, you know, would be nice. And he suggested we build a separate diorama of Franklin Paint and present it to him. And I said, well, this is great, except these are my hours. So I agreed with him and I got it about 67% done. And I had called or emailed one of the owners. Because we're also filming a documentary that goes along with this project.
Okay, sure.
And they agreed to be interviewed. And so this was August this year. I sent them an email, and I got an email back a couple of days later. Oh, we sold the building. We sold the company. No longer own it. So I probably had about 250 hours into this second smaller diorama that literally went into the trash Monday and got taken away by waste management. I wasn't expecting that. But honestly, in a project this big, you realize how reliant you are upon the good graces of people who have no skin in the game.
No skin, right.
You know, maybe they want to see it built.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they don't think I can, and they want to see me fall on my face trying to do it.
Or they're willing to at least just give him the info so that he can do what he needs to do and then get out of my face.
Right, leave me alone. So, you know, and Joe Landry has, you know, throughout this whole process, the three dioramas has been unbelievably helpful. He is involved in the documentary with me.
Okay.
We've started to shoot it through Franklin TV. And interestingly enough, when we were doing the opening shots down on the Midland Division side of the mill store, the abandoned tracks.
Okay.
We were down there one Sunday night about 7 o'clock. We're shooting, and Joe's doing the opening, and we're standing on the railroad tracks. And Chris is shooting, and he says, there's a woman coming up from behind us. So we stopped, and I turn around, and it's Margaret, 7 o'clock on a Sunday night, in a dress, you know, charging towards us. So we had a conversation about whose property we were on, and we were literally standing in the middle of the rails.
Right.
And we had asked her if she was willing to be interviewed, because she to me, she knows where the bodies are buried.
Sure.
There. I mean, her grandfather bought that mill in 1941.
Yeah.
And she'd balked several times to the point where I said to Joe, I'm not going to ask her again. And so she turns to Joe and she says, who are you? I says, well, I'm Joe Landry. She says, you're Joe Landry? And her whole expression and demeanor changed. He says, yeah, I'm Joe Landry. She says, I watch you on YouTube all the time. So I'm elbowing Joe. Well, we, you know, now we can get to do the interview. So tentatively, she has agreed to sit down with us in the studio.
Okay.
We'll see if it comes to fruition, but I would love to get her on camera.
Absolutely.
Because I'm sure, you know, she probably doesn't talk about it a whole lot, but she must have some really good stories.
And, you know, for somebody with that kind of connection, she's got some stories either of her own or from her father or grandfather. So, yeah, there's history there to be captured while the people and the stories are still around, by all means.
And I think I told you, too, when we talked about this last year, that my goal for this was not to just put another diorama in front of visitors and stand there and talk for 6 hours on the weekend.
Right.
It's not a good way to exhibit anything. And as a museum, we've kind of set that standard now. We don't put anything on exhibit without some collateral information that explains it.
Sure.
Now, the museum hosts, which are usually the commissioners, are versed in talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when we have the wedding dress expo exhibit, when we have the train exhibit, we get a lot of visitors.
Absolutely.
And it's hard to do it justice. So we have a series of mounted panels that have descriptions of many of the different areas of all three dioramas now that'll be on display with them.
Right.
So hopefully people, and photographs of what the original looked like. So hopefully when people see this thing, they say, oh, all right, I understand what I'm looking at.
Right.
When we put out the second diorama, we had so many questions about where the locomotive roundhouse actually was in Franklin.
Yeah, so let's recap, because we've talked about the one, two, and three. This is the third one. For those who may not be aware of those details of what one and two are, one was the depot building, which is still standing, and then the kind of the coal chute building, which is no longer.
Correct.
But you did find coal along the edge, which is now part of the exhibit.
Yep.
And then Train Town 2 was more the Thompson Press building and the roundhouse, both of which are
what? East.
East of
as the railroad goes,
heading towards Boston.
Correct, yeah.
And what you've done now on the three is you've gone under the bridge to the crossing and done the buildings down there. So when we walk into the museum, we're going to be able to see kind of the three in that kind of arrangement.
So we'll call it Broadway, right? That center that center aisle.
Center aisle.
When you walk into the museum, you will see the Thompson Press roundhouse diorama first, followed by the train station in the center of town, followed by the mill store and Franklin
so
Paint.
2-1-3 in that arrangement.
Exactly.
But in terms of the physical process from east to west, the geographical positioning as opposed to the timing it was built
exactly. Yeah. And interestingly enough, or maybe not, interesting to me, is the building, the museum itself, is oriented exactly
that way.
So so you are following actually geographically, as as the prototype.
Following the track.
I think, too, what people will see this time is just how evolved the railroad became as it was leaving town. That was a major junction on Union Street.
Clearly.
So you have a line that branches off to Milford.
Yep.
Called, ironically, the Milford Branch. It's all the Midland Division, but the Milford Branch.
Yep.
Which now goes to Forge Park and still to this day goes to Milford.
Sure.
You've got the main line itself, which ended up in Newburgh, New York, but through Hartford. And then a little further down the tracks, you had the Cumberland Branch, which branched off to the left and was really kind of a very lightly used rural line that was a perfect example of how railroads just overbuilt. Never saw enough traffic to earn its keep.
But having seen and heard about that, I've seen and been able to follow. So if you're along 114 in the Diamond Hill area, you can still see the right-of-way there as the line went down into Valley Falls, into Central Falls, into Pawtucket, which is like, wait a minute, Pawtucket?
Yeah, how'd it get there? the railroad, when they pull up their tracks, leaves scars that never go away.
Yeah.
And you can, if you know what to look for, you can spot old abandoned right away.
Sure.
In a lot of places, that, you know, you kind of scratch your head and say, how'd that get there?
Yeah.
That being said, at Union Street, you know, there are two tracks that go past the Franklin Station downtown.
Yes.
But when you get to Union Street, it's 10 tracks.
Yeah. It was spread out.
And that was to accommodate, all of the various traffic going in any of the directions, as well as provide some
sidecar spot.
Some sidings, some staging track for cars that, were going to be moved at some point.
Right. Because through Joe and others, I believe DCR had participated in a presentation at the Historical Museum on the trains and the train life in Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
There was the milk train that went through on a regular basis for a number of years.
Yeah, milk was a huge commodity for Northeastern freight railroads, more so in Vermont, but Massachusetts had its fair share.
Yeah.
Franklin had a lot of what are called through freights,
right.
Freights that started in Boston and ended up in Hartford or Newburgh, New York, and were put into railroad yards and then broken up and made into new trains that were shipped out elsewhere, or vice versa, coming from the west and going to the east.
Sure.
Of course, all of that has dried up now. There is no freight traffic through Franklin, and the line ends in Franklin, the Midland Division anyway, and it's going to be a walking trail, hopefully in our lifetimes.
At least the town was able to successfully document and deed the purchase recently, which was phenomenal to do that within 2 years to get a.
I think my timing was really good for this project.
Yes.
Because there's information in the ground there. Mm-hmm. So part of what I do in this process is archaeological.
Yeah.
And without a lot of digging, I found spikes and tie plates that came from that era.
Sure.
That I was able to, what's the word? Steal.
borrow.
I don't think anyone
cares. Repurpose.
If anyone wants them back, they can have them, and they'll be on display as part of this exhibit.
Sure.
But there were also changes happening at the mill store, too.
Yeah.
None of them were told to me in advance, but that's a different,
that's part of the evolution of the project.
I drove past there one day, and I looked over my shoulder, and I realized that the smokestack had been taken down.
As opposed to continuing to grow a tree out of it.
Well, it was in bad shape.
It was.
You know, when you've got vegetation growing out of it, that means that the mortar is not really holding anything anymore. So it needed to come down. It would have been nice if I had
given
a heads up, having just spoken to the owner a couple of days before that, but I pulled in and took some bricks, and they'll be on display as well. Mm-hmm. And so she, you know, Margaret sold the building. Kaplan bought it, and Kaplan was the company that also bought Clark Cutler and did such a wonderful job down there. And,
sure.
And I'm excited to see what they do with the mill store, but they've already done a lot of cleanup. And
it's all preparation work, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was an area that was so overgrown I couldn't get back there to take measurements and pictures, so I guessed.
Yeah.
That's all I could do.
Right.
I don't like to guess, but in lieu of doing nothing. But anyway, I went there one day and I said, boy, it looks like they've done a lot of brush cutting.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, I was able to get back there where the boiler house is.
Right.
Measure, photograph. Of course, I had built my version of it already.
Yep.
It's completely wrong. Had to recut it, rebuild it.
It's more accurate.
People have said, who will notice? And the answer is me.
You will. Well, you do stuff as a sort of fellow creative artist. You do stuff to please yourself first, because if you're not satisfied with it, then likely somebody else will not be satisfied with it.
Well, right. You've got to do it to make yourself happy.
Mm-hmm.
If you are recreating history in miniature and you're not doing it as accurately as you can, then what's the point of doing it in the first place?
True. Right.
So I tried to be as thorough as I could be. And we were. We came. At the end of the day, Sam and I are within 1 millimeter of being completely accurate with our measurements.
Mm.
And the only reason we can't get below that is because the laser won't calibrate for
won't
less
go
than
that.
There's a margin of error.
Fine. Sure. Yeah.
So there may be things that are exactly to scale, and there may be things that are a millimeter off. I can live with that.
A millimeter, yeah. If you're digging a tunnel through from both sides, a millimeter will get you to the middle.
A millimeter works. So, and then just in terms of the scope of the project, I imported 100 little people from England.
Mm-hmm.
I had to coax them all to stand still while I painted them.
Right. In period dress, no less.
In period, absolutely. Well, that's why they came from England. There's a company over there that does a fantastic job creating miniature people.
Yeah.
And the companies over here are not that great. There's a premium to be paid for that.
Sure. Quality counts.
50 period automobiles, but the diorama is so big, and I just don't have time to build more.
Mm-hmm.
They're expensive to buy already built.
Sure.
If you can find anybody that's willing to sell them. One guy I look at, I don't know him, and I've since unfriended him on Facebook, but I posted some pictures on Facebook, and he wrote back, but gee, it must be Sunday. There's no cars. Well, there's 50. It's just this thing is so big.
Right.
I know I can't please everybody with it, and there's always a critic out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had people look at these exhibits and say, well, you know, that's not right. You know, what'd you do that for? But at the end of the day, the feedback for these has been so incredibly positive and heartwarming that it makes it fun to move on to the next project.
Yeah. Having been, at least for the other two, and then overhearing some of the conversations, you know, people come in with stories that then spark other stories, or questions that spark an answer that then spark other stories. And I find that absolutely fascinating, that it just continues to have and generates the story.
Well, that's part of the history coming to life, and that's what I'm trying to do with all this. I'm bringing history to life to the best I can, and people like John Lombard come in and they talk about, well, you know, I worked in Thompson Press, and here's my union book.
Right.
That's incredible.
Sure.
And, you know, John Lombardi is a wealth of history himself, but and I'll be interested to see what, you know, conversations take place as a result of this, because many, many people in Franklin worked at the mill store and Franklin Paint or, you know, Haywood Mills, Franklin Yarn.
Yeah.
I did use some of the same processes that I used for the previous two. I dug around, found some coal. There's a ton of coal over there because there was a coal trestle.
Sure.
They heated the building with coal.
Yeah. And when you're handling that kind of a bulk item, things are going to happen.
Yeah.
Things are just going to fall
absolutely.
Off. They're going to accumulate over years.
Well, you can
it's there.
You can walk down the rail trail and find coal.
Oh, absolutely.
So that was the easiest, probably the easiest part of the project. But, you know, it was interesting to see, you know, you look at that space and you say, well, there were seven tracks on the Midland Division mainline side of that building. How did they fit in here? It doesn't look like there's enough space for that.
No, yeah.
But there were three on the other side.
Sure.
You know, I made it work as best I could. And you know, I'm just so thankful to the people that, you know, even if it was just an encouraging word.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, thankful to the Historical Commission, the rest of the commissioners for their support. I think this thing has probably taken a little bit of a life of its own. And it can be all-consuming.
Right.
Anything that takes that long to build, you know, there may be some people on that commission that are like, mm-hmm. when's this term up?
Enough of this train town. Let's go on.
But to me, one of the points of this is what we're capable of doing for exhibits.
Sure.
And whatever the exhibit is, whoever does it.
Correct.
Not to say mine is the high bar, but...
Yeah. No, people can go and read a history book, but then to have that kind of display mm-hmm. so that you can truly get a representation, deliberately it's a representation, but that's impressive in and of itself. And clearly with your attention to detail, it's that much more impressive. Oh, yeah, this is what it was like. And then when the people come in and said, well, yeah, we used to work there, or I knew so-and-so to work there, that keeps that story alive.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep. And then, of course, you know, the non-construction pieces of this took some time, too. Finding more of the right freight cars, mm-hmm. Finding passenger cars in this for this one.
For that vintage, right.
Finding the right locomotives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pulling some what you know, 20 years ago would have been an expensive brass locomotive. Nobody's buying that quality of locomotive anymore.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, just to put on a static display.
Yeah.
But again, I don't want to think of it as, well, I took a shortcut here. Nobody's gonna know.
Right.
And there's there are people mm-hmm. in my hobby that do come in to see this thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, it should attract, and we'll go back. So it's going to get around Thanksgiving-ish. It's going to be installed. So the official, I think, is, what, December 6th?
Yeah, so it's being the three dioramas are being delivered to the museum on the 24th and 25th. 24th or 25th weather, depending.
Correct.
And I will set them up that week, take time out on Thursday to have some turkey.
Yep. And recharge to go back in.
And if you happen to stumble into the museum the weekend after Thanksgiving, they should be up, although it's not our official opening.
Right.
So may not be, you know, completely.
The final piece may not have found its place yet.
Correct. Yeah. But the official opening and talking to Alan, I think there's going to be some sort of ceremony, train hats for everyone.
Okay.
Speech making and
all aboard
and baby kissing and you know all that sort of stuff.
Now boarding for Franklin
on the 6th of December,
uh-huh.
and we're going to run through the end of January.
Right.
In conjunction with that period of time, I'm doing the second Sunday speaker series in December.
Okay.
And the topic of my discussion, both December, January, railroad related. December, I'm doing a talk on, it's called Riding the Rails, Hobos in America.
Ah.
And I think I may have unearthed the hobo camp in Franklin.
Oh, that'd be cool.
So I don't, I will probably not ever know definitively.
Yeah.
But what I did was, when I started thinking about this, knowing what I know about how hobos traveled by rail.
Sure.
There were two likely spots where they could be.
Sure.
One down just to the west of Franklin Paint. The other at the reservoir.
Oh.
So to the east of Thompson Press.
Yeah.
And I went down there with a shovel and dug around.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't take long before I found some clamshells and some old tin cans. Now, are they from the 30s?
Could they have been from some other weekend party, whatever.
They could have been, but logic kind of says that it was highly likely that this is possible too. So I'm sticking with that.
Yeah.
And then in January, Joe Landry and I will be doing a presentation on Hayward Mills and Franklin Yarn. That it's the same presentation that we've done. We've teamed together for the past two dioramas.
Correct.
So he will talk about the prototypes and the evolution of those mills, and I'll talk about the process of recreating them in miniature.
Yeah, because Mills, certainly as one who grew up in New England, grew up in Pawtucket, which was the birthplace of the Industrial Revolution,
sure.
with Slater Mill.
Yep.
There's a lot of mills in New England, and mostly along waterways,
yep.
but not always and not only, but there are a lot of mills.
And in this case, just by way of a little bit of history, those two mills had their work cut out for them because they weren't located on water.
No.
Sanford Mills in Medway is, and that, you know, when they dammed that up and they created that waterfall, that powered that mill.
Sure.
They didn't have that luxury. They were heating with wood and coal from the get-go.
Expensive.
Sure, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. And Joe may cover, because I recall back also somewhat in that 30s era, or actually it may have even been in the 20s, because the Sacco Vizzetti was around in that era.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently there was somebody who was trying to come from Milford to Franklin, and according to one story, they miscalculated the timer on the bomb they were setting.
Well,
and set themselves off instead of whatever the target was going to be.
So there were four gentlemen of Italian descent in, I believe it was 1918. Don't quote me on the year.
Mm-hmm.
That were intent on blowing up part of the American Woolen Mills, which is the mill across the Milford Branch tracks, which is now the apartment complex.
Which is now the apartment complex, but still in that same neck of the woods.
The footprint of the brick mill is still there. There was an office building just like there is still at the Franklin Mill store.
Correct.
And the story was they were going to blow up the office. I don't think they were going to try to blow up the mill. But these four guys were trudging through the wetlands in the back.
And if everybody's been by there, it's rather wet.
I don't know how you get through there, but they tried. And the bomb or bombs detonated prematurely, as I would guess homemade bombs might have a tendency to do.
Right.
And, you know, blew these four lads to smithereens.
Mm-hmm.
And two of them were brothers. And part of a well-known name in Franklin, I'll leave it at that.
Right.
But it was years, with an S on the end and no exaggeration added for editorial color, that they were finding parts of humans and clothing in the trees and, in the wetlands.
Sure.
That anarchism was fairly common at that point in time, and certainly brought home to Franklin. It's a part of our history that isn't widely told.
No.
Alan Earls did a Second Sunday speaker series on it a while ago, and I don't think many people knew about it at all.
Yeah, well, that entire Italian history, Sacco Vizzetti's, and all the other piece in post-World War One.
And by the way,
going into World War II.
You know, because we're not trying to indict anybody.
No.
By all means. Years later, they were found to be innocent, you know, long after they had been executed.
But, correct.
It was just that was what was going on at that point in history.
Yeah.
And we're also going to talk about this a little bit in this documentary that we're shooting as well.
Yeah.
Rob Lawson, professor of history at Dean,
is
going to talk about that subject. And I think it'll provide some context to tie the whole project together. And I think we're hoping, I've kind of, to be perfectly honest, when I finished the diorama in April, I was a little burnt out. And it took me several months before I really wanted
you wanted to do something else.
Really wanted to do anything about finishing up any part of it that still was left untied.
Right.
But we will finish that up, and it will be part of a presentation at the museum at some point, hopefully in the next few months.
Yeah. And I think we started talking before, but is there a – there's probably not a Train Town 4 given the way the space of the Historical Museum is, but is there another part somewhere down the road, or is that still to be determined?
We're going to add on to the museum. We're starting a major construction project. You know, the budget in Franklin is so good.
Right.
You're right. We certainly have a limit to the space we have, and that has kind of dictated, at least in terms of how they're displayed, that there will be these three major dioramas. Right. Now, if you ask me, you know, would I ever say never? No.
No.
I certainly
right
wouldn't.
Right opportunity would come knocking.
You know, there are a couple of things right off the bat that are of interest to me. The first is that just on the other side of Union Street, on the eastern side as you're heading towards the station, the New Haven Railroad had a major freight house there.
Okay.
That when I was a town councilor, it was derelict, and I pushed the railroad to tear it down because I didn't want it to burn down and people get hurt.
Yeah.
But it had been there for many, many years.
Sure.
The railroad owned it. They leased it to Clark Cutler. They used it for a while. You've got the Children's Museum.
Yep. It was the former was
Agway. And before that, it was Eastern States Farmers Co-op.
Sure.
There was also what was called an interlocking tower just adjacent to that freight house that controlled, that had levers inside that controlled all of the switches,
all
the
manual
railroad switches,
right.
From the station all the way down to the last switch going west, long past Franklin Yarn.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a much smaller diorama.
Sure.
Less time-consuming, less complicated.
Smaller in scope, but I'm sure there'd be issues in terms of replication and measuring. And
well, interestingly enough, many, many years ago when that freight house was still standing, I had the foresight to measure it.
Oh, you did?
I don't know why. I knew it was an old building, and I knew it might not last long, so I went out there and measured it and drew it out. So I have the plans for it.
Oh.
I have enough of a view of the interlocking tower that I can recreate it.
Okay.
Of course, they put the funkiest roof on it possible.
Yeah.
And Brad Chafee, who did the renovation work for the Children's Museum,
sure,
came to a historical commission meeting one night, and we were just shooting the breeze. And I said, I'm thinking, do you mind if I come over with a tape measure, my camera? I'd like to, you know, draw this up before it gets changed in case I ever want to build it one day. He said, I have the original blueprints. I'll send them to you right now. And he literally went on his phone, and in 5 seconds, I had the blueprints.
Okay.
So I've got 90% of what I need to do it.
Sure.
What I need is the motivation to do it, and I don't have that right now.
No.
The other piece that I might do someday, two things, is the Moseley Mills complex.
Moseley Mills, yes.
American Worsted.
Yep.
And problem with that is it has changed substantially since 1932.
Right. That's one building or set of buildings that clearly, even from the outside, you can tell it kind of like, it was almost like blocks were put in different places. Mm-hmm. There must have been scheme for it at a time.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's not readily apparent from the outside.
No, I've walked around there several times, and I end up just scratching my head. I don't know, so I rely on Joe Landry for photographic evidence, and I don't know what he has for photographs.
Right.
We haven't broached the subject.
Just coincidentally, having crossed the paths, HFA, who's an architecture firm located there, hit the news radar that I caught. They bought another architecture firm in Boston, so now they're. They've expanded, I think, into the kind of life science work as well.
Okay.
HFA had appeared on my radar because they had put a proposal together for Davis Thayer, which is still on the town council to be decided list.
Yeah.
Presumably after the police station site, if ever, is decided, then they'll get back to Davis Thayer.
Sure.
So HFA had popped up on the radar. They renovated that piece in the building, so they may be an easy resource in terms of architect. They liked that history. They were getting into Davis Thayer. Just sure. making the connection. While,
sure.
While
yeah.
It
no.
Comes
that,
to mind.
That's a great resource. That's a large mill complex.
It is.
And right now, the idea of doing another large mill complex is a little daunting. It's probably a non-starter for me. And I think if you sat down with Tina without having to hold a gun to her head and said, you know, Scott's about to do this again, you know, that might be a non-starter too.
Right, right.
But I mentioned Rob Lawson at Dean. I've been working with some of his students on some of their history projects, and one group is doing a research project on the history of the trolleys in Franklin.
Yes.
And so we went down to the old trolley barn in Unionville,
sure.
which is still there.
It's still there.
It's
yeah.
a self-storage facility
now.
Next
to the Glen Farmer. Yeah.
Yes. And it was the first time I'd really looked around, and I thought, this is cool.
Yeah.
And that would be, you know, a small diorama.
Yeah.
Very small.
Well, and it's an interesting conversation starter, because clearly at that time, that day, we had the trolleys, and there's need for some of that kind of mobile transit, mass transit, even if it's on a small scale,
mm-hmm.
that would avoid some of the traffic issues we have, because clearly the way we're built, when you're in the middle of Charles River and living in a house, to get to any store, you have to drive.
Sure.
It'd be nice to do some sort of route, which conceptually could be designed and tweaked over time, but
yep.
some well, light rail, you know, bus traffic, I think would
think
help.
About how important that was in 1910.
Oh, of course.
Very few people owned automobiles.
No.
So your option was horse or walk or bicycle.
Right.
Which many people also didn't own, even though it was quickly becoming a major fad. But these things are all tied together. So so one of the reasons for the inception of trolley lines was to get employees to the mills.
Yes.
Because otherwise, you know, if you lived 2 miles from the mill, you know, and it took you, you know, an hour to get there, well, that...
Oh, yeah.
You know, that wasn't helping anybody.
No. And thinking back, even, you know, I remember in the Uptown Pub is now closed, but
mm-hmm.
it always struck me as to, everybody refers to downtown, and yet it's the Uptown Pub.
Yeah.
Well, if you look geographically, it is uptown,
mm-hmm.
especially from Unionville,
mm-hmm.
especially from other parts. You have to go up, so it's not just walking in the winter or the summer.
Sure.
You're walking uphill
yep.
to get to downtown,
yep.
to get to the train station.
From either direction. Yeah.
And
yeah.
thereby, certainly, there was a number of mill complexes in and around that.
Yep.
But yet, there were, you know, the Glen Farmer was a mill, too.
So, you know, you had mills and farms, and you know, both needed to get people to and from. So it made sense. And in the same regard, as they developed these trolley lines, and I know we're getting a little off topic, they needed to stretch from town to town,
yeah.
Especially from the major mill areas of Woonsocket and Milford,
mm-hmm.
Because people in Franklin worked in those places and yep. vice versa.
Sure.
So you needed as convenient a way possible. I'm sure it was still a long ride.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to get to the mills in Woonsocket yeah. from Franklin.
Absolutely.
But you couldn't get there
almost
otherwise.
Like, almost like a T-ride to Boston.
Sure.
even is today.
Sure. And it's that trolley was one of the things that fueled the Industrial Revolution.
Sure. Yeah.
So
all steps in the way and... You know, the history is still being made. We're living it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice to see it kind of reconstructed in the way you're doing it. So I'm excited to see it.
Well, thank you. And just to go back and answer your question definitively, I think what I'll do is after this third diorama is exhibited and we start to get some feedback,
mm-hmm.
I'll base what, if anything, is next on that.
Right, because you've got some choices, clearly. And
yeah.
who knows, something may come up from the discussions as well to throw something else into the mix.
Yeah. You know, as I get close to retirement, there is time to do these things. I do think that if it were ever to be a major project again, we would need to look at fundraising options.
Correct.
Because these are not cheap to do.
Well, in space, because clearly the 1, 2, and 3 are piece parted, but put for the display,
mm-hmm.
you could not attach another one to that.
Right, right. So, and that's
yeah.
the other thing, too. So, you know, we've got a 12-month window of, you know, where we're trying to plug in new exhibits.
Right.
And for the time being, you know, the railroad exhibit will take 2 months, let's say. We want six or seven other exhibits that are revolving in and out of there.
Absolutely.
I don't want it to be all about the railroad.
No, no. Because there are a whole bunch of aspects to Franklin, even into the mills, which may be getting further down the track, so to speak. But the felt, the straw hats, I mean, any one of those aspects that, okay, we have that in our history, but how much history do we really have to tell those stories?
Exactly.
So,
and in, you know, just as an aside to that, I'm very interested in doing an exhibit around our very rich athletic history in Franklin.
Sure. Yes.
We are blessed with having a high school and a town youth program that has and is very successful, has been and is very successful.
Never mind going back into the days when an Edward L. Grant played in the pros and was the first baseball player to...
Right, but, I mean, isn't that a great place to start?
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. So. Plenty of stories here, plenty of opportunities.
Yep.
Which is why I'm having fun doing what I do. And I'm sure you're still having fun doing figuring out what you're going to do.
Yep.
Well, thank you for spending some time, and I'm looking forward to the additional conversations in the museum, just kind of like overhearing what's going on, because there's going to be some fun stuff.
Sure thing.
Excellent. Well, thank you. And the listeners, thank you for listening. Stay tuned. Come out to the museum December 6th through at least sometime in January. And once that's firmed up, we'll put it on the calendar and give you plenty of reminders. Come on out. And a quick reminder, we do this because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.